All right. Good evening, everybody. Strewman here, the Four Outdoorsman. Mark Lukey, my partner, is next to me. And I'll tell you what, but our buddy Garrett behind the glass is going to have to take over the conversation with Lukey because I want to go watch the Masters. I got to watch the end of the Masters. I've never missed the end of a Masters in 20 years. So is that okay with you, Mark?
You're going to leave me?
We got it on. You can see it.
Okay, well, then just tell me who's winning. I'll move my microphone. That's a car. That's a race car.
Yeah,
thing.
Right there, right next to it.
I was about to say, you really don't want me carrying the show with Mark here.
You're a smart man. You're a smart man. Anyway, I think what's his name's going to win?
Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, he's
got a commanding lead right now.
He's the real deal for sure. You know,
he was my favorite one on Full Swing, too, the Netflix documentary. So I'm glad he's doing well. He was just down to earth and humble. Appreciate that.
Why was he your favorite?
Just because he didn't seem like a jerk. He just seemed like a good guy, and he was very humble, and he's like, you know what, I just happen to be good at golf, but I'm, you know, it doesn't define his life.
And he's looking for a new caddy, so maybe you're the man.
I would love to be his caddy. That's the best job there is. Some people say backup quarterback in the NFL is the best job. You know, you never play.
Backup
you make
kicker.
Millions of dollars.
Don't get hurt.
I want to be a caddy of someone that makes, you know, $3 million every weekend.
Well, that's not.
They get what 10%, right? Or 5%?
Usually 10%. Yeah.
So I'm not good at math. What is it? What is?
That's a hundred. If they win a million, it's $100,000. They win $3 million.
$100,000 for carrying clubs around for 4 days.
Well, if they make it, yeah.
Wow.
How much did Tiger's caddy get?
Do they get
weekend?
A little green jacket if they win?
Yeah. No, that's only
they
for
get
the
green mittens.
That's only for the midget caddies. So, yeah.
You little people.
Oh, little people. Yeah, little people caddies. Yeah.
Brandon, welcome back, buddy. So you missed us last week. You were like at some great celestial event. What happened last week?
I drove down to Indiana to be in the path of totality for the eclipse. My dad and brother went to the last one.
Uh-huh.
And just the way they talked about it and the pictures and stuff, I knew that I missed something special. So I was like, I'm going to make it to the next one. Drove down, brought my dog. That was an adventure. Stayed in Rockford, Illinois on the way out there, but drove all the way home from Indiana in one shot.
Wow.
That was pretty brutal. But, dude, the eclipse was amazing. I can't get over it still. Like, totality was nuts. No picture will ever do it justice. Even telling stories is rough. You got to see it in person. All the partial phases of the eclipse were neat, but when it got into totality and you could take the glasses off and you could see stars behind the sun and it was literally like a burning ring of fire in the sky, my favorite part was what they call the diamond ring effect, and that's as soon as the moon starts to move past the sun, that first little sliver that shows, it just pops like insane, and it looks like a bright, brilliant, shimmering diamond. It was wild, man. Like, I was at friends of my dad's property. They have there's a little neighborhood there, and there were probably like six other parties going on in the neighborhood, and you could hear them all cheering and going nuts.
Was this as cool as the last time you went to one of the Star Trek conventions?
This was so much cooler. But no, it is really neat. I mean, the temperature drops insane. It gets really dark real fast. Yeah, I mean, noticeable drop in temperature, probably like 15 degrees or so. It happens pretty fast. Like, when it starts, you know, kind of getting dark, you can sense colors changing, and it's a weird kind of dark. It's not like, you know, at night, but in totality, it was like almost like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
But it's still, the sun is still like up above you in the sky, so everything just looks weird.
Yeah.
It was like creepy and cool and beautiful and terrifying all at the same time. But loved it, and I recommend it to anybody. I know we got the next one here for us would be 2044.
Right, I'll be ready.
And Strew said, you gave me permission to dig you up, to exhume
you
if I have to.
I'll be 95 or 96, whatever.
Oh, you'll still
I'm
be alive for
I'll
sure.
be around, yeah.
We'll so, take you.
Yeah. Although I have seen, I think two. I remember seeing at least one. One was about 9, 10, 11 years old, and one was about 15 or 16. I've seen two total ones. It is a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's really a cool thing. I don't know if I would, I apologize. I don't know if I would drive 1,000 miles to go see one, but
it was like 780 something miles.
Yeah, but at 9 o'clock, just open the curtains, man. It's the same thing, right?
Well, I've heard reports back from everyone here that saw nothing but cloudy skies.
No,
and stuff,
brutal
so,
here.
Yeah,
it was cloudy here.
Yeah, it was worth it. Worth the price of admission for me.
I mean, that's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to see.
When I shared it with my dad and my brother, there was sort of a bummer part of the whole event, though, because afterwards, me and my youngest brother went. The middle brother, my niece had, like, dance and stuff like that, so they couldn't make it, so they weren't there. But my dad said to me and my youngest brother, you guys got to promise to make sure that Addy sees a total eclipse at some point. And that just kind of made me, he was basically telling me he ain't going to be here in 2044. Yeah. And I was like, oh, man. That immediately kind of brought me down a little bit.
Who was Addy?
My niece.
Okay.
Yeah, she wasn't there. But I got to share it with my nephew and my other brother and sister-in-law. So it was a cool family deal. Glad I did it. I know everybody's sick and tired of hearing about the eclipse.
Not at all. No.
It is amazing. And I've been laughing at everybody who kind of downplays it or talks, you know, like it's a dumb, who would do that? I'm like, yeah, you don't know. You haven't seen it. That's the only reason you would say something like that. You wouldn't be saying that.
It blows me away that someone figured this out 500 years ago or whatever it is, that, okay, in 2024, it's going to happen again.
Yeah, that they can track it like
how
that.
How can they track that from...
Well, and what's funny is they were off a little bit, right? I think they ended up adjusting the path of totality a little bit because the first path that they put out or were showing wasn't exactly accurate. But all I kept thinking about the whole time watching it was, what were people thinking hundreds or thousands of years ago?
Oh, yeah.
No wonder they were sacrificing virgins or whatnot. Like, you would think that the world was ending, for sure. Yeah. It was a crazy, crazy day.
Yeah. In the middle of the day, it just goes dark, and you see a burning ring in the sky.
And it would happen pretty, because all during the partial phases, you can't even really tell unless you're wearing those glasses. If you look at the sun, it's so bright and big, it just looks like the normal sun. But you put the glasses on, you can see that it's being blocked. And only until it's in totality would you notice, like, something's different up there, and it would create a panic, I would imagine.
You're talking about hundreds of years ago. I would not be going out there looking for virgins to sacrifice. I would be looking for virgins, but not to sacrifice.
For a different reason.
Yeah, there's a different reason, pal. Yeah. Come on, it's the end of the world. It's your only shot, young lady.
Right.
It's happening. Yeah.
That's a good
I'm going to help you out. Yeah.
But it was really neat, so I'm glad I got to do it. Thanks to Garrett for taking care of things while I was gone and stuff. And
that's cool. A cool thing, man. I wish I could have gone with you.
Next time, 2044, put it
you
on
got
your calendar.
It. You got it.
Let's see, what's only 20 years from now, right? So I will be 93.
Absolutely doable. And if anybody's going to make it that long, it's true.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm going to start buying my Depends now.
I'll be 39.
For the road.
You'll be 39.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I'll be retired. I'll be 60-something.
64, I believe, probably. Yeah. Aren't we, like, the same
Not
age?
Not a chance.
People won't retire then. Retirement age will be 75.
You think you're
going
to get to retire? No. I gave up that dream a long time ago. Yeah. I feel like I'll be working till I die.
Yeah. We can finally go golfing together.
And you'll finally get a chance to beat me. Right? Yeah. That's funny. Hey, I tell you what. I read the St. Paul Morning Paper every day. And
you're the only person.
I get the paper because I cheat with my next-door neighbor. We split the cost of it.
Yep.
And I sneak over
is
there.
Is that like
morning.
Stealing Netflix passwords?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But it's not quite the same. Yeah. I can't. They don't say anything about Yellowstone in the St. Paul Morning Paper. But
so who gets it first? Do you have to wait for it?
No, she doesn't read the paper until about 11 o'clock. I got a lot of time.
So you got all morning with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I ring the doorbell about 8 and piss her off, you know. She's a nice lady. But anyway, talking about old age and whatnot and what's happening as you grow older, the St. Paul Pioneer Press has a story, a full-page story, written by a guy, a doctor, who's in his late 70s, I think. And it's all about what now he's treating people for the same things that he has, you know. And it's all about life and getting older and getting older and getting older. And it's very interesting if you're in your 50s or 60s wondering what's going to happen in the next 20 years. It ain't going to be pretty, man.
I can't imagine. I'm falling apart
now. You just
now.
Have to, he said, you have to prepare for it. It's, you know, don't pretend like it's not going to happen. It's
right.
Let's get real. It's going to happen. So let's get ready for it. Just
get
things all, get it all organized, and whatever happens, happens. But that's a great story in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, if you can try to find that. What's new with Mr. Lukey? You got anything new with family stuff? And
it's you know, it's exciting time. I called Power Lodge to get my boat out.
Yeah.
They're fixing my live well, which did not work most of last summer, and that was a pain in the butt. They're going to fix that. They're going to fix my glove compartment, and I should be able to get it next week. So I'm super excited to be able to get out on the water. I built a dock in my backyard.
I saw the pictures,
I have one of those neighborhood ponds. You're not supposed to build a dock, but I built a dock and have a little rice canoe
boat. Is that kind of like stealing the Netflix?
Yeah, kind of. And I was so excited because I've been staring at a giant blow-up inflatable ball for 2 years, right? I have this pristine, nice pond. There's nature everywhere. There's a neon blue blow-up kickball that's been floating on the pond forever. And I was so excited to get it. I got in the canoe with Nick, and we paddled over, we picked it up, put it in the canoe, threw it up in the yard, and I was going to, went inside to get a drink or something, looked out the back window, and I see my youngest, Sammy, run over, get the ball, pick it up, start running across the yard, and I go, he's going to throw it back in the water. Nick goes, no, he's not. He would never do that.
Oh, yeah, he would.
Toodles all the way across the yard, goes onto the deck, and throws it as far as he can back out into the water.
And where is it now?
It's in the water. I haven't got it yet. He goes, that's his home. He said I had to return it back to its home.
Well, it's like Wilson, the coconut or whatever that was.
So I got to go back out and get it. But no, that's been a lot of fun. Just getting on the water, just canoeing around. I haven't canoed in many years, and it's fun. And we canoed as a kid all the time. We went to the Boundary Waters. We canoed on my dad's cabin lake. So it was fun to teach the kids how to canoe.
Yeah.
And it's been a great week. Obviously, the weather's great. Getting the garage ready for wintertime. And also, I'm going turkey hunting Thursday and Friday. I actually took off work.
Really?
My first time taking off work with the new job. So I'm going with my friend Barry. We're going to go up Thursday and scout the area, get everything ready, and then hunt Friday. And I should come back Friday night. But
with a turkey. With a story. Turkey,
I hope so. It's very beautiful land out by Alexandria. And he's got, the whole plot mapped out. This is where they bed down. This is where they strut. This is where they walk. So I got to be an idiot if I don't get one, right?
So Barry is very experienced at turkey hunting.
I mean, I don't think he's like a pro, but he knows what to do, and he knows where they are, and he's certainly probably better than I am, but I'm excited to try something new, you know what I mean? Because I hunted on Sam's place for the last couple of years, and it's been a while since I've hunted a different land for turkeys. Last land I hunted for turkeys was when we were at Lake Traverse.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Didn't you hunt turkeys at Sam's place?
Yeah, that's what I meant. I've been hunting at Sam's place for a couple of years.
All right.
I'll be excited to try, a new area and try new things, so.
Are you going to?
I see him strutting around the neighborhood.
Are you practicing? Hey, listen, I talked to Ron Shearer a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Because we have a cabin up in Ely, Minnesota. You understand that. And I know the turkeys are like from Rochester to Alexandria. Who knows where they are. But my buddy up there at our cabin took a video of turkeys in Ely, Minnesota, right by Lake Vermilion. And when I told Ron Shearer that, I didn't show him the photograph. Maybe I did. And he said, I think the guy had a few too many cocktails because they're not that far north. There's turkeys up in Ely, Minnesota now. Holy.
That's awesome.
Holy buckets. It's awesome if you want them up there. I don't know.
Why not? That's great.
Are you?
There's no deer, but there's turkeys.
Are you? The turkeys ate them all. I don't know. Are you?
They can fly away from wolves.
Are you practicing your calls? Are you learning more about turkey calling? Or are you just going to rely on Barry?
We're probably going to be in different stands. I'm pretty confident in my calling with a box call.
Yeah.
I used a diaphragm call the first couple of years I tried it, but I just think my box calling sounds better, and I'll be in a blind so I can set it down. But I have had luck calling turkeys. Like, they call back, they come in. I just haven't had a good shot at a Tom.
You are going to be one of those guys that is going to be addicted as the rest of them. You're mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're going to start looking at videos, you're going to start training, you get different kinds of calls, you can do all kinds of stuff, and if you get one, the whole world is going to change for you.
I don't know, I'm kind of lazy. I'll be excited to get one, but I've experienced that. I really enjoy turkey hunting because of the interaction. I love an excuse to get out in springtime, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
it's nice weather right now.
It's nice weather.
It opens this weekend?
Or it opens has it opened? This week.
It already opened.
Yep, this is the first week.
All right.
So I'm going Thursday and Friday.
Good for you.
So, yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited for fishing starting. I see some bubbling up in the pond. I think that fish are starting to come in a little bit because it's been so beautiful out.
Nobody knows. Well, sure, somebody knows. But nobody knows how deep your pond is, right? Have you ever
I know it's at least 20 feet.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's not more than 3-5 acres?
It's probably, 3 to 5 acres.
Isn't that something? So that should hold fish.
Yeah, it should hold fish. It's got big clumps of, green algae. Like, it's not clean. I wouldn't swim in there, and I certainly wouldn't eat anything out of there, but there's fish. We've caught bluegills out of there, so.
You've taken your kids tubing in Lake Chetek and by our cabin.
I'd rather be in Lake Chetek than
really?
The pond. Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
At least there isn't massive piles of green algae floating around all the time.
Oh, good for you.
But, Chetek does turn into pea soup in about, what? When does it turn into pea soup? August?
Oh, no. Right after Memorial Day. I mean, right about then, yeah.
Because I always go there for 4th of July, and it doesn't seem that bad, 4th of July.
That's because there's so many boats in the water, it's all churned up.
It stirs it up.
Yeah, it stirs it all up, yeah.
Does someone need to throw some?
We're talking about the Chautauqua chain of lakes in Barron County, Wisconsin, and it's a gorgeous place to be. Yeah. Six lakes, my wife and I have a nice little cabin on there, and it's a lot of fun. It's beautiful. It's got good fishing, but it's just not it's not clear water.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to do something about that for ever since we've been up there.
I
probably
know
many years.
I clear that
before.
Thing up.
Yeah.
Some invasive species.
Yeah, there you go. What do you call those mussels? Zebra mussels.
I can't believe that lake hasn't gotten. It's so popular, and so many people travel there. I can't believe that there's no zebra mussels.
Well,
there.
The zebra mussels don't. They can't live in that crap.
Yeah, they die.
Yeah, they die. They die as soon as they get the water, man. So I see them floating all the time.
They tried. Didn't work out. They moved.
I'm excited about you. I can picture myself being a kid or with my three kids if we had a little pond to live on, with a dock, canoe.
Yeah.
You got another little boat that you use, and just let them go.
Yeah.
And they put a life jacket on.
Oh,
I know
you
taught them, you're teaching them all how to fish, and let them go.
Right.
And they're going to be fine, and they'll be out there for hours.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because that's what my childhood was like, and maybe I'm selfishly trying to have the same kind. But I would go explore, take up fishing pole, take a bike, go do things.
Yeah.
I know it's a different time, and video games are a lot more exciting now than when I was a kid, but I hope they take the boat out, and I'm going to encourage them to do so.
Good for you. Hey, got a little shout-out to the Minnesota Twins, actually. I work for the Twins. They lost today. I think it was 4-3. They're up 3-0 in the eighth inning, and they gave up four runs and lost 4-3 to Detroit. But that's not the shout-out. The Twins have a special again this year. Anybody, I don't know what's wrong with my throat. I apologize.
It's okay.
Anybody who has a fishing license or a hunting license can go online and get Twins tickets at a discount, and they have like six games lined up for the discounted tickets for the Minnesota DNR, And the first one is April 21st. You get a discount for the tickets. You have to do them online or buy the tickets prior to game time. And then everybody who does that gets a DNR hat and that kind of crap. So if you're thinking about going
Should
to a Twins
ballgame.
Should we
have someone from the Twins talk about that?
No, I'm talking about it right now. I am from
you
the
are
Twins.
From the Twins.
I'm
like
from
the someone Twins. Famous or
oh,
important.
Yeah, I'll call Kirby Puckett. Yeah, that's sort of. Yeah. And I know more than Kirby Puckett does now.
I'm sure all the players know everything about this promotion.
I'm sure they do, yeah. They've got their calendars marked out. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get to go to the ballpark. But anyway, so go to Minnesota Twins and find all about it. It's kind of a cool deal.
That's a great deal.
Yeah.
Good for them for recognizing that kind of thing.
And there's six games this summer.
How do you prove you have a license?
You have to show it somehow, I guess. Or I don't know.
Like
I
type
have no
in
idea.
Your DNR number or something?
I have no idea. You're asking me questions. I don't know. But it should be fun.
Well, sir, we only have a minute till break. Why don't you tell us who is on the show tonight?
Captain Barb Carey is going to be on right away. It's about a couple of minutes here. She's with Wisconsin Women Fish, I think is what it's called. And I'm telling you, the more I read up about this organization and Captain Barb Carey.
Is that WWF?
Yeah. That's pretty Captain Barb Carey, don't get upset with Mark Lukey. He's just being funny. But that's pretty good, Mark. Anyway, but the more I read about that organization and more I talk with Barb Carey, it's amazing what this lady's doing. That'll be a lot of fun. Then we've got Sean Warner, guy from Andover, Minnesota. And he fishes all the time. His life is fishing. He's been around for many, many years. He just came back from Mongolia in a fishing tournament. I don't know, but we'll talk about that.
He's an American representing Norway in Mongolia.
Yeah,
how
yeah,
exactly does
yeah,
that work? I
yeah,
guess we'll find out.
And I'm concerned about spending money on a guide in Brainerd. This guy goes through 13 time zones to go catch a fish for Norway. So it'll be fun to see what that's all about.
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
Sean, cool guy. Can't wait to talk to him as well. You all set, my friend? Be right back with Captain Barb Carey.
You're listening to the 4 Outdoorsmen, part of Bob Outdoors.
You know, it's easy to get excited about a couple of days in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, one of the top five fisheries in the entire country. Nowhere else you're going to find walleye season 12 months a year with no slot limit, five fish a day, and 10 in possession. That alone tells you how many fish there are in the 170,000 acres of Devil's Lake. Yeah, there's great restaurants, entertainment, hotels, hiking trails, and more. But for me, Devil's Lake brings me back every year for walleyes and jumbo perch. It's a must. Hey, I'll tell you what, check out devilslakend.com, and thanks.
DeZiel Heating and Air Conditioning has let the dogs out, and their two-fur deal is back. If your furnace and air conditioner are over 10 years old, they could roll over and break down. Let DeZiel help you fetch a free air conditioner with their two-fur deal. For a limited time, when you purchase a furnace, you get a free AC unit. DeZiel Heating and AC. Details online at DeZielHVAC.com. That's DeZielHVAC.com.
Hey, Balsam Beach Resort is just 5 miles south of Bemidji. Not just to fish, but completely enjoy a memorable family experience. Sure, multi-species fishing on beautiful Lake Plantagenet is superb. But with the heated pool, all the lakeshore water toys, basketball court, bonfires at night, Balsam Beach Resort is a must. Patty and Clint, they work their butts off to make sure that the cabins and grounds are spotless, and your guests are going to make memories, and they're going to last a lifetime. Trust Strewman on this one. Check out BalsamBeachResort.com. Every one of us has dreamed of a train ride through the mountains of Colorado and New Mexico, but most of us have been saying, someday, for a long, long time. But Diana and I are just like that no more. We're jumping on board with Heart of the North Tours on July 9th to be part of the Trains of the Old West Tour, and we'd love to have you join us. It all starts with a private pickup at your home, and then a comfortable coach ride to Lincoln, Nebraska. Then the fun really begins with an old steam locomotive chugging its way up the canyon in Georgetown. Gets better every day. Five trains, 9 days, and the Heart of the North Tours does all of the work. Someday, that's now. Join Diana and me on what surely will be a never-ending memory. Get all the details at heartofthenorthtours.com. Thanks.
Source for fishing, hunting, and cruising boats. Maximize your summer fun with the new Alumacraft, Triton, Low, Bennington, or Godfrey boat. Right now is the best opportunity to score the boat of your dreams so you and your family can hit your favorite lake in style. From multi-species to bass to hunting to pontoon boats, Power Lodge has the best-built, best-handling boats on the planet, and they back it up with an industry-leading service and customer care. Power Lodge, right down the road in Ramsey, Minnesota.
Get friends together, shoot some clays, and raise money for Kids Help. How can you beat that? It's the 8th annual Dave Weiss Memorial Sporting Clay Shoot on April 27th, benefiting Shriners Children's Camps Twin Cities and U of M Masonic Children's Hospitals. Presented by Clay's Camps for Kids Twin Cities, a 501c3 charity, with the support of Adelson Peterson Construction. Are you in? April 27th at the Minnesota Horse and Hunt Club in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Sign up at claysCampsForKidsTC.org. That's claysCamps, number 4, TC.org.
Did you know one of the best investments you can make? It's in yourself. At My Computer Career, in just a few months, you could start your new career in the high-demand, recession-resistant field of information technology. Isn't it time you invest in you and start a career in networking, cybersecurity, AI, or upskill to boost your current IT career? So, get the ROI you deserve at My Computer Career. No experience necessary. Start now at mycomputercareer.edu.
Financial aid is available for qualified students, including the GI Bill.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
All right, welcome back to the Four Outdoorsmen. Everybody, thanks for listening. My buddy Mark and I are glad to have you guys as friends of the Four Outdoorsmen. All right, I'll tell you what, we got to start this right now. We have a special guest on. Captain Barb Carey, thanks for being on the Four Outdoorsmen.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Barb, now listen, if I sound funny right now, I usually have a pretty good voice, but if I have a little raspy voice, it's because I'm excited about, I was doing a lot of cheering today. I was bowling in a Legion tournament in Dayton, Minnesota, and frankly, I did pretty well. So we had a good time and a lot of laughs, a lot of cheers. So
I'm a little bit raspy, but maybe you think it's sexy. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I do.
Sound fine to me.
All right, baby. I do. Captain Barb Carey, we've had you on a couple of times before. It's been a while, I think. But I just love the stuff that you do with Wisconsin Women Fish. I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show or anything like that, but Mark, I was talking about prepping you as Captain Barb Carey of Wisconsin Women Fish, and Mark says, oh, you mean WWF? Like the big old bunch of big old wrestling ladies.
Because women anglers in Minnesota is Wham, and I thought that was cool, right? Yeah, Wham sounds cool.
Yeah.
And since WWF is very cool, too. I don't know. Yeah. Do you guys go by that moniker?
No, not really.
Oh. Speaking of that, since you brought up Wham.
She'd be the Vince McMahon, the head of the whole deal.
But if, once you get to meet this lady or talk to this lady, she can be the head of a lot of things. Speaking of Wham, Women Anglers of Minnesota, we have them on every once in a while as well. You actually have some kind of a friendly competition every year with Women Anglers of Minnesota, don't you?
Yeah, it's coming up soon. We call it the Border Battle, and it's on the fishing float on the river.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's got to be fun. And last time we had you on, I volunteered to be part of that so I can measure fish or something. Tell us about that, would you please? That sounds like a fun deal.
Yeah, you know, it's become so popular that we have to cut off registration. And we limit it to one rod a person. And it's just a great time. It's nice to meet and hang out with all the people, other women anglers from each other's clubs, and A lot of people are members of both clubs, so there's it's just a lot of fun. And
you can be a member of both. You don't have to swear allegiance to Wisconsin or Minnesota.
Oh yeah, you can be a member of both. We have members from 22 states and two provinces in Canada in our club.
That's really cool. That's good for you.
Yeah, and Barb is talking about women, Wisconsin Women Fish, of course. And anyway, I was reading all about it, of course, and it says, we are a fishing club for women only. No boring meetings, no obligations. We just go fishing. That's
really, my kind of club.
That's my kind of club. And there's no pressure. There's none of that kind of stuff. You know, there's no peer pressure, whatever. But tell us all about, how did you start and when did you start Wisconsin Women Fish?
Well, you know, it started about 20 years ago when I would be out ice fishing and never saw any other women. And, you know, then I decided, well, they must not know how fun it is, so I had a little event, and that turned into a summer event, and, you know, next thing you know, we got women from 600 women from over 20 states, so it really snowballed.
You have tons of events going on. I don't know how you find the time. I watch some of your videos. You post a lot of stuff on Facebook. There's a lot of education involved. I don't know how you find the time. Is this how you make a living? Are you full-time this, or do you have some other way to make a living as well to pay your bills?
Well, I'm actually a retired police officer from Madison, Wisconsin, so I have a pension, and that's what pays the bills. And this club work is actually just kind of my passion and a labor of love. And, you know, it would be hard to make a living on it for me, just because we keep the prices so low. For example, we have a event coming up on the Bay of Green Bay where we're taking the women out and teaching them how to troll and jig for walleyes. Big water, big fish. The gals are taking their boats or jumping in with another gal's boats. And we're charging them $20 for the 3-day on-the-water clinic.
Wow.
Yeah, you can't be that. I'm going to put a dress on just to learn as much as I can. Go ahead, Mark.
I don't mean to sidestep us, Barb, but if you were a police officer in Madison about 25 years ago, you probably chased me around East Wash when I was 16 years old.
Probably.
I was from some prairie, and we would cruise in the big city Madison and, you know, drag up and down and try to look for ladies. But, yeah. You probably chased me. Anyway, I sidetracked.
And I was going to say...
Especially if you went down Willie Street, then I was probably after you.
Probably.
And I was thinking the same thing, not because of me, because I'm an old guy right now, but the only time I've ever been to Madison when he said that, I'm thinking, holy balls, this lady had some work to do, because I went to one Minnesota Gopher Wisconsin Badger football game, and I thought, holy buckets, this is chaos. This is these people are nuts. They like to party real hard in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of, you know, it's not a far jump for fishing, because when you're a police officer, something exciting can happen at any moment. Same thing with fishing.
Yep.
Yeah. You were talking about, you know, if you couldn't do everything just on your pension alone, you couldn't, you know, you have to start charging people to do these things. And another reason you need more than your pension probably is of your new girlfriend. You said you have a brand new expensive girlfriend in a video that I saw of you a couple of, maybe a week ago. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. And it's actually, I'm staring at it in my backyard. And, you know, this year our motto for Wisconsin Women Fish is we're upping it up a notch.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we first started, no women had boats. Now we're doing these big boating outings on Green Bay and Big Water. And now I can teach them how to salmon fish and drive big boats on Lake Michigan.
Well, I want you to describe your expensive girlfriend, because our listeners don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have I bought a 25-foot 2008 trophy with two 200 Optimax boats.
Oh, yeah.
That'll take big water.
That'll get you around.
Yeah, it's got radar and a hard top. And so we totally rigged it out. We had to go through and make a bunch of repairs and fix a bunch of stuff. And we just got the decals on the side, and it looks spectacular. The name of the boat is the Queen of Kings.
That's awesome.
That's a wonderful name.
Barb, last time we talked, did you have your captain's license, or is that a recent thing?
No, I've had it for about 6 or 7 years now. I've been fishing out on Lake Michigan for 10 years, you know, and I always wanted to, my goal was always to go bigger and get this bigger boat, and I finally decided that, you know, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. I better get going.
We're talking with Captain Barb Carey of Wisconsin Women Fish. Do you guide as well? Not that you're necessarily a professional guide, but do you do so as well once in a while, take people out and say, not necessarily from Wisconsin Women Fish, but do you do so?
Yeah, I have a waiting list now of 60 deep to go out on the big boat chartering on Lake Michigan.
Wow,
that's awesome.
So, you know, and it's, you know, I'm not going to do that every day. It's, you know, it's too exhausting, and I still have these other events we're putting on for women, other teaching events, and so I'm going to do it a little bit just to, you know, my opinion is the Great Lakes are like the final frontier for women anglers.
Yeah.
I'm the only captain that I see working boats out there, or I'm the only boatload of all women out there, and I'd like to see that change. I'd like to see more women comfortable even taking their walleye boats out there. That's how I started, and catch this. The salmon fishery is absolutely amazing in Lake Michigan.
Right.
What are the biggest challenges you're facing then with getting other women involved?
Well, a lot of it is just getting time on the water and experience in their boats. That's why we're kind of helping them with boating basics classes. Once they get a boat and they get on the water, then we have these, okay, let's go to Green Bay. And so we're working with them individually on boat control, trolling, a lot of these skills, you know, what to do in case of an emergency, you know, what to do if something goes wrong. So we're kind of supporting them around their boating as well as their fishing. And that's what it takes, you know. I mean, if you're new to this, there's a lot to digest.
Well, you're never going to stop learning yourself as well. One of the videos I saw of you in your garage or something, I think it was, of course it had to be your garage because there was a sign above a door that said, I love this bar. I remember seeing that. I love this bar. Anyway, so you yourself are still being educated. I think you hired somebody, some volunteers are helping you do some rigging or teaching you some things about your own boat.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing, you know, the women I'm teaching are getting so much more skilled that, you know, I have to kind of keep one step ahead of them so I have something to teach them.
You know, that's got to make you feel good, kind of like your appearance a little bit, and seeing a kid go off and get on their own. That's got to help. And then they're going to help other people and teach them as well. That's got to make you feel good.
Oh, it does. In fact, we had some members today teaching a youth class, and a lot of them are signed up as DNR educators. They're coaching high school fishing teams, and They're all in once they're in. I mean, I think it's just been great for the whole women in general.
How do people get involved with you, and is there an age limit or minimum that you take? And because I'm sure you're swamped. You can't take everybody every time somebody wants to go to one of your seminars or classes or even on the water.
No, we have ages 18 to, I think, 86 is our oldest gal now. So it doesn't, you know, we just don't want, you know, if they're 18, we like their mom to go too, you know, until they're 21. And,
yeah.
You know, so especially the weekend away stuff. But we don't have any youth programs, but I tell you, teaching moms, and we're making coaches and volunteers for other organizations. And they're just, once they're in, once they're hooked, they're all in.
Good for you.
Yeah, so you said people from Minnesota can also sign up and be a part of your tournaments and part of everything, because I think it's, you know, there's so many great fisheries in Wisconsin as well, and so, you know, we're on the border, close to the border, so there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to Minnesota, I think, three times this summer. We're going to Mille Lacs on a launch. We're going over to Lake Vermilion. And, you know, we don't have tournaments. We just have, you know, outings, fun outings or learning events. But, you know, it's, we don't have any competition with each other. So, you know, people are cheering louder if their friend gets a fish than if they got one themselves.
You talked about going to Lake Vermilion. We have a hunting shack on the just off the northeast corner of Vermilion. I call it the Polish Palace. And it's been in our family since 1961. If you ever get up there, I think, me personally, and I'm not even saying this because I'm biased, I'm not up there as much as I used to be. I think Vermilion is one of the most beautiful bodies of water in the state by far. It's gorgeous, and the fishing's really good, of course. But if you ever want to go up to the Ely area and fish Vermilion and use the hunting shack, you just let me know. It's a good little place to hang your hat.
Well, I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. What kind of events have you got coming up? We've got a couple of minutes left. Tell us what's coming up this summer for you. What are you specifically excited about looking forward to?
Well, you know, the walleye clinic's a big one, but we're also going bow fishing, which is becoming very popular, we're doing a slip bobber walleye event on Lake Winnebago, and we have the big fish camp in the fall. That event will sell out the first 12 hours it opens up. We'll take 80 women up to northern Wisconsin and spend 4 days up there at our biggest event of the year.
How much fun is that going to be? That's so cool. I'm excited for you, Barb. And Captain Barb Carey, of course, with Wisconsin Women Fish. And I suppose if more people want more information, they just got to go to wisconsinwomenfish.com or something, right?
Yep, wiwomenfish.com. And you can follow Captain Barb Carey on Facebook. We're going to have, we've been doing some lives. And I think on our maiden voyage with that big boat, I think we're going to go live. So you don't want to miss that.
I encourage everybody who's listening, and this gets replayed on Tuesday to the whole world, obviously, and I encourage everybody who's listening who has any interest whatsoever, go to Captain Barb Carey's Facebook page. I follow it, and it's fun because you're crazy, for one. You're just funnier than hell, but you are, and you don't take a whole lot of things too seriously, but you teach a lot. You got great stories. It's a lot of fun. So Captain Barb Carey, Wisconsin Women Fish. Well, I'm proud to say that you're a friend of the show, and thank you very much for what you do, and thanks for taking the time to be on the Four Outdoorsman.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Have a great, safe summer, and kiss your girlfriend for me, will you, please?
Yeah, I will.
Take care, Barb.
All right.
We'll get right back. Sean, what is his last name? I don't know. Sean.
From Norway.
Yeah. No. I'll be right back with Sean. Warner, I got it. There you go.
Listen to Total Country Bob FM anytime, anywhere, online at mybobcountry.com. Thanks to Aurora Asphalt and Concrete. Go to aurora-asphalt.com for a free, quick estimate.
You know, it's easy to get excited about a couple of days in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, one of the top five fisheries in the entire country. Nowhere else you're going to find walleye season 12 months a year with no slot limit, 5 fish a day, and 10 in possession. That alone tells you how many fish there are in the 170,000 acres acres of Devil's Lake. Yeah, there's great restaurants, entertainment, hotels, hiking trails, and more. But for me, Devil's Lake brings me back every year for walleyes and jumbo perch. It's a must. Hey, I'll tell you what, check out devilslakend.com, and thanks. Hey, Lake Plantagenet is a fisherman's paradise and home to Balsam Beach Resort, just 5 miles south of Bemidji. Balsam Beach is the exclusive resort on the lake and is a perfect Minnesota destination for multi-fishing limits, RV camping, ATV travel, or simply relaxing with your family in a remote natural setting. The boys and I visit every year, and every trip our families enjoy all of the amenities this award-winning resort has to offer. Beautiful resort, wonderful hosts, great fishing, and that's BalsamBeachResort.com.
Yes, it wasn't always a...
Whoops. Here we go. I got carried away.
This is a first-rate show we got here.
Let me talk to you about Power Lodge. Power Lodge is your number one source for fishing, hunting, and cruising boats. Maximize your summer fun with the new Alumacraft Triton, Low, Bennington, or Godfrey boat. Right now is your best opportunity to score the boat of your dreams so you and your family can hit your favorite lake in style. From multi-species to bass to hunting to pontoon boats, Power Lodge has the best-built, best-handling boats on the planet. And they back it up with industry-leading service and customer care right down the road in Ramsey, Minnesota.
Hey, Heart of the North Tours presents Trains of the Old West. Diana and I would love to have you join us on this special journey through the mountains of Colorado and New Mexico. 5 different train rides, a 3-hour Jeep tour over 12,000-foot corkscrew pass into the Red Mountains, culminating with a ride on the Pikes Peak Cog Railway. And we're going to be staying in beautiful hotels. Many meals are included. The scenery is next to none. And Mike DeRozier of Heart of the North, he's going to make sure that this bucket list experience will be one of your most memorable. Diana and I are truly excited to meet you guys on July 9th. Check out all of the details at heartofthenorthtours.com.
Total Country Bob FM.
All right, by the way, one of the commercials that you just heard was for Balsam Beach Resort on Lake Plantagenet, just 5 miles south of Bemidji. We want to give them a shout out. They sponsor us every year in the spring like we are right now. We just brought them back. And so, Clint and Patty, again, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to get you as many people out there as we can. It's a gorgeous place. Balsam Beach Resort, just 5 miles south of Bemidji. Hey, I think we got somebody on the line named Sean Warner. Sean, welcome to the Four Outdoorsmen.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. How are you, sir? We've heard a lot of names around the Twin. We've been doing the show for, this is our 10th year, as a matter of fact. And we've never had you on the air, and I've seen your name back and forth in Facebook stuff and different postings, but we've never had you on the air. And you are a local guy, right? You live in the Andover area?
Yeah, I have lived in Andover for almost 25 years now. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Spring Lake Park and pretty much been here all my life. Did a couple of years in the Army and then wanted to come back here.
Attaboy, and fishing is your life. Fishing is a big, big part of your life, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been fishing since I was a kid. My great grandfather had a resort up on Deer and Moose Chain, and fishing's been a big part of my life ever since.
Well, let's talk about. Let's talk again about your back. Were you born and raised in the Spring Lake Park area? You live up in the Andover area for the last 20 years, give or take. What were your earliest experiences in fishing? What got you so excited about being on the water?
Well, you know, when we were growing up, it was kind of a way of life. I mean, you know, you had to do a couple of things by the time you were 5, 6 years old in our family. And other than being ambulatory, fishing and ice skating was the other two requirements. And, you know, pretty much everything else came secondary to that. But, you know, I've always enjoyed it on the competitive side, mostly ice fishing. I've done some NAFC tournaments in the past. I've always kind of, and I'm retired now, so I have enough time to pursue my passions, and ice fishing is definitely one of them.
It's interesting because we live in Minnesota, obviously. Well, speaking of ice fishing, how much ice fishing did you get a chance to do in this winter? Any at all?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll speak more slowly. Did you get much ice fishing done other than Mongolia? Did you get much ice fishing done in Minnesota?
Yeah, again, I'm having a hard time hearing
you.
Maybe you can hear me. Stru was asking, with such a crummy year, did you get any ice fishing done in Minnesota?
You know, I think you're asking me about my ice fishing history in Minnesota. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah. Did,
yeah. I mean, you know, basically, you know, with the ice fishing thing, you know, I didn't really get into competitive fishing up until about 10 years ago. There used to be the North American Ice Fishing Tournament circuit that was active up until last year. I did that a couple of years. I think our best finish was third place at the national championship in Mille Lacs in 2014. You know, but I keep in touch, you know, with the other competitive circuits, you know, UPL, Ultimate Panfish League, and Minnesota Made here. But, you know, my connection to the international scene was totally by accident. You know, about 10, 12 years ago, it was 12 years ago, I had heard about international ice fishing championships and just kind of checked it out. And I believe that was when the U.S. national team was in Ukraine. And I remember seeing a couple of videos of some of the guys there. And they were sitting with a flasher on Lake Peipus in Latvia practicing. And obviously the person that was there didn't understand Russian. I do speak Russian.
Wow.
And they were... He had a flasher, a Vexlar of some type out there, and they were all making jokes about him in Russian, saying, oh, he's out here looking for Soviet submarines, not fish, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was kind of funny, so I just sent a random email to Mike McNett, who's still with U.S. Angling, and I just, you know, in one word, I just said, or one sentence, I said, dude, you're in serious need of a translator. And after that, it was, you know, as they say, you know, the rest is history. I got involved with that and U.S. Angling, and you know, still going.
When you, how do you get chosen to be on the international fishing team? And how many people are on the team? But how do they decide who is going to be fishing internationally?
Well, I mean, that depends on the individual teams. Of course, there's certain teams that have a greater a number of participants that try out for it. Just speaking for the United States team, usually what they do is they hold a tryout every spring, where they get you know, any number of individual anglers. A lot of them are from the pro side, you know, the NAFC side. And what they do is they hold a weekend tryout. Used to be in Rhineland or Wisconsin. I'm not sure where they're doing it right now. But what happens is that usually they select the five anglers plus the reserve based on that tryout. And then, you know, there's also, you know, varying degrees of support squad. There's a couple captains, a delegate, and so on and so forth. But that's where they generally select the six anglers. For Norway, it's a little bit different. They have actually six qualifying tournaments spread over 2 months. They have between 45 and 50 anglers that usually participate in it from all their various clubs around Norway. And I think they throw out the last results and they average those cumulative scores, and that's how they select their team. But that's all done in the spring or late winter, early spring. And generally a lot of the other international teams also follow that routine.
So you were on the Norwegian team, correct? How did you get on that team if there was a trial process over there, or did you get like grandfathered in or something?
Well, I had actually have a little hand in putting that team together. They didn't have a team for a long time, and actually Norway has a very rich history of competing, even, you know, more so than the USA, Canada, or a lot of the other countries, because back in the, you know, the Cold War era, they used to compete with the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. along with Sweden and Finland in what was known as the Friendship Cup. I happened to run into a person when they didn't have a team for a long time who put me in contact with another person, and they made their debut, I believe, in Finland, in Kuopio, in 2015. And, you know, after 10 years at U.S. Angling, you know, I decided I wanted to move on to a different challenge. Last year, they found out I wasn't going to go to the championship in Estonia. They called me up and said, well, you're going to have to be on our team now. And, So that's what I've done the last couple of years.
That's excellent. So we have about 10 minutes left, and we just have to hear about your trip to Mongolia. 30-some-hour flight. What is the landscape like? Tell us, just walk us through that trip. Paint a picture for us, because I've never heard of anyone going to Mongolia, let alone to ice fish.
Well, it was, I think the flight time there was 23 hours, but that doesn't count layovers. Yeah, it was a long flight. It broke my previous distant record, which was to Kazakhstan. Getting there, Ulaanbaatar is a very cosmopolitan capital. There's about 500,000 people that live there, and that's basically, you know, generally, that's about a third of the population of the entire country. Where we went was a city called Karakorum, which is actually the ancient capital of the old Mongol horde, you know, Chinggis Khan, yeah. Genghis Khan. And it was about a 5-hour drive up there. They had roughly between, 4.5 to 5 feet of ice the week before when it was in, you know, minus 45 degrees.
I can't believe digging through 4 feet of ice, 5 feet of ice.
Yeah.
I can't.
Well, and that. Yeah. And the other thing is you have to understand during international, this is international competition. There is no such thing as power augers.
Oh my God.
This is all, no. Yeah, these are all hand augers, you know, 110, 130 centimeter hand augers. And, you know, we've run into ice before. This Temirtau in Kazakhstan had just about the same, amount of ice, but this is it's a really athletic sport. It's not a young man's sport because typically during a 3-hour championship session, there's usually two Saturday and Sunday. I mean, the anglers are going to be drilling anywhere between 30 and 40 holes, and through that much ice, that is a lot of work. The weather there, thankfully, got really, you know, really nice. The week before it was absolutely terrible. They had, even for Mongolia, I guess it was extremely cold. They lost like 500,000 livestock the week before.
Wow!
But once we got there, it actually hovered around, you know, between minus 10 and zero, which was you know, good for the anglers. It did turn the roads into a little bit of mush. I think the USA team bus broke down once. Our Norwegian team bus broke down once. So it was a little hard on the vehicles, but as far as the weather goes, it was quite something. The other thing is that they call Mongolia the land of the eternal blue sky, and they aren't kidding, because when we were there, I don't think I saw a cloud the entire 10 days we were actually at the venue. And snowburn and sunburn is a real thing over there. We couldn't find enough SPF 50.
Wow.
For our team, much less the other teams. And if you go on the various Facebook sites, I think the Mongolians do have a Facebook site devoted to the championship. And, you know, all the teams, they took their team pictures the very last day, and, you know, every one of them looks like they just came back from a long weekend at Cabo San Lucas. Their faces are so red.
What was the, like, hotel like? What was the food like? Just describe Mongolia in general.
The hotels that we were at were really nice. We actually stayed at a relatively new resort. It was very modern, styled after, it's kind of the modern take on their yurts, the nomad houses they stay in is actually fairly new. The food there was excellent. You know, they don't have a lot of, it's pretty much a meat-eating culture, so, you know, not a lot of vegetarians over there. I think they wanted every team had a team guide, a local team that was assigned to guide the international teams, and they all kind of had the same playbook. I remember when we were wrapping it up, and I knew this was coming. I had heard about this, but one of the things that has been a staple in their cuisine for, you know, thousands of years is marmot, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a big spiny aquatic rat. And they pulled our captain in and me in there. And, of course, you know, we had it. And, you know, it's fine. It's a little greasy. But what they like to do is, they, for dramatic effect, and I think they did this to every team, so they ask you, how do you like it? How do you like it? Oh, yeah, it's great. And then they pull the tail out with the rear end, and then the head out with the big teeth there. And, our captain, our captain wasn't ready for that. I probably should have prepped him for it.
That a boy. And you talk about spotters. What are spotters in regards to ice fishing?
So with these competitions, it's really important. You know, there's five zones, A through E, and every country has one angler in each zone. It's spotters are so important to this because they're not only able to, it's a lot of times it's a speed contest. This one wasn't so much because there's some bigger weights with the perch. But a lot of times these are speed contests. So you need to know exactly what's going on around the zone. And that's where your spotter comes in. An experienced spotter can really make the difference for even the best anglers. And I think if you ask some of the top-notch anglers on Team USA, like Chad Schaub, who I've known for, you know, since I've been doing these, and Nick Schertz, they will tell you the same thing. And this year, I think, you know, that's where Team USA really, you know, surprised the world a little bit. Nobody really saw them coming. You know, I don't think Team USA, we've ever finished higher than, you know, we have never finished in the top five. And, you know, they just came out from nowhere this year. Their captain, their longtime captain, Myron Gilbert, who's another good friend of mine that I, you know, he's a great guy. He's got a couple of NAIC championships under his belt. He's passed on his knowledge and his wisdom. And I think he really got the whole team to buy into that concept this year where spotters and anglers are working together. One of the really cool things that the USA team did this year is when they were having a great day too, we have a weigh-in where the anglers go up there, they weigh their bucket and so on and so forth. Team USA actually sent their spotters up there to weigh in. And I thought that was really cool.
You are kidding. That's cool. Go ahead, Mark.
I got a quick, we don't have a lot of time, but what, tell us about the fishing. Are you're targeting perch, I'm assuming, or what do the perch look like there? Are they the same size? And I think I read in the article that you caught something called a roach. What is a roach?
Yeah, roach is pretty much a usual target species. They look like a small whitefish, but they're actually related to the carp family.
Okay.
They're a big sport fish in Eastern Europe and also in Mongolia. You know, we don't catch a lot of perch in these Eastern European contests like Estonia last year. The perch they have over there are the European redfin perch, so they can get big. And this year, Mongolia, the lake that they picked out, the Mongolians did a really good job. It was a long ways away, but the fishing there was fantastic. And as a result, I mean, you saw, you know, 2-pound perch being caught, you know, regularly. And so that's, you know, the ice might have been really thick, but I think all the anglers would do it all over again because the fishing was just that good.
Were the tactics to catch those perch different than they are in the United States and Minnesota?
You know, since I wasn't fishing, you know, I would say that if you asked any of the USA guys, I would say probably a little bit different. But, you know, I can't speak with any authority. I was in the jury, so I did end up sitting in a couple of the zones with both Chad and Nick and kind of watched them a little bit and their technique, you know, trying to catch the roach versus the perch. And, you know, so there's probably some similarities, but, you know, I can't really speak with any authority on that.
I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a story. You know, if you guys ever want to read about this, the story about Sean Warner is in the Outdoor News from last week, and it's a great, great story. I respect you for taking the time, not being afraid to spend the money to go that far, and all the other kind of things that are involved. That's a big, big obligation. So I'm sure everybody involved in international fishing is appreciative of you as well. I'm going to finish with one quote. You said your goal is to promote international relations, mutual friendship, and a common understanding through fishing. That is a great goal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, the fishing is almost, you know, kind of secondary or ancillary. I mean, everybody wants to win medals. Everybody wants trophies. For me, I just think this is a, you know, a great opportunity to get beyond the news. For example, you know, the last couple of years we're missing a couple of teams from Russia and Belarus.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of friends on those teams, and it's really too bad that current events have kind of gotten in the way.
Right.
Because, you know, you see on the news that, you know, this is happening, that is happening, but when you get together for these fishing competitions, that all goes away. And I think that's where, you know, teams from that side of the world, you know, can meet teams from the USA, Norway, the Scandinavian countries, and, you know, understand the people, and we can understand them a little bit better than, you know, what's portrayed on our news as well. And that's kind of always been my goal. I mean, just, you know, using fishing as just another arm of diplomacy and promoting good international relationships and understanding and respect.
Well, I tell you what, Sean Warner, you know, we're going to let you go because we have to get ready for Real Talk Outdoors following us, but thank you for everything you do involved in this part of the fishing industry, and thanks for being who you are. You're a pretty nice guy, and it's been a privilege to have you on the 4 Outdoorsman. So thanks for taking the time, sir.
All right, thank you very much,
you
guys.
Take care. Have a great day. All right, that wraps it up. Sean Warner, we thank you very much for being on the 4 Outdoorsman, and Captain Barb Carey from the WWF, Wisconsin Women Fish. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon. My buddy Mark's got something to say.
Get outside and make some memories.